Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Our guest again today is Ray McLean. Ray's the president and founder of Commercial REO Brokers Association. Ray's had a varied background in commercial real estate, running 30 years, building apartment complexes, condo projects, and currently trying to get REO brokers familiar with the commercial process and providing education for them. Ray, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Let's mention your website so people can go there and find out about becoming a commercial REO broker and taking advantage of the education that you're providing.
Sure. It's the Commercial REO Brokers Association. That's a lot to type, so we use an acronym, which is CREOBA.com, CREOBA.com.
All right. Appreciate that. You had mentioned in our first segment that the peak year 2007 did about $260 billion in CMBS, and commercial real estate loans are just very different than residential in that they have a due date where the refi happens, and generally it's, say, 5 years. So 2012 could provide some excitement where some owners are looking around for financing and there may not be as much of it as necessary. Do you expect the REO, the commercial REO, to start really showing up between now and the end of 2012?
But also, you know, we've thought that for the last 2 years.
Okay.
I can tell you what we are seeing, though, is that more than REO is we're seeing note sales and now short sales. Realize the banks don't really want to foreclose a property. They don't want to foreclose a house. What you have to go through with an REO broker and, you know, get rid of the tenants and clean up the house and whatever and to sell it. Those are really aggravated by, when you have to foreclose on a restaurant or a hotel or a hospital. Mm-hmm. Are you going to run that? Are you going to leave the owner in possession to manage something? It's a very difficult position that the banks are in, and quite frankly, they prefer not to even foreclose their commercial properties. And what we're seeing is that for every one foreclosure, there's at least five, perhaps as many as 10 notes that are sold. And basically, all of the banks today have got non-performing loans that they would be willing to sell. They don't like to advertise them a lot because if the word gets out that they have, you know, billions of dollars of, or at least a high percentage based on the size of their bank, of these non-performing loans, they could get a run on the bank, then that could, if they hit the press, their equity gets vanished and the FDIC comes in and shuts them down next week. So they're very careful about who they will release this information to, but they are, most of them are working with brokers that have, qualified buyers or qualified buyers that contact the bank. I was talking to the conference last week. I was in San Francisco as a speaker at the Smith Crane Conference, distressed asset, and one of the gentlemen up there had come to our conference in San Diego, and he used to be the senior VP of Gateway Bank. And one of the things he was talking about was people are calling him. We're calling him all the time. Let me see your non-performing loans. We want to buy it. He had a usual solution. Normally, when I've done that, or some of our brokers that I've worked with, typically you call the bank, you get to hold of the person that has got the authority, and they'll let you come in and see what they have on the books. You have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and you have to get a buyer broker agreement from your buyer because they won't pay a commission. They won't list the property with you. They'll just let you, write down an address and you do your own evaluation. They won't give you a price, because if they list it or give you a price, they're admitting it's worth them probably less than what's on their books.
Okay.
But they will work with you, and basically you just show them you have proof of funds and a non-disclosure. You find something that you think you might have a buyer for, or your buyer's looking for, and you write them an offer and you bring them an offer. If it's the offer prices, what is acceptable to them, they will say, fine, close it in 2 weeks, it's all cash, okay? That's typically the way these note sales go. Sometimes there'll be a portfolio. Here's, you know, I'm looking at one now. It's about $10 million worth of mortgages. They're looking to sell the whole portfolio.
What would be the discount that you might expect if you're buying something like that?
It really is all over the map. But some of the things that I've seen, some of the deals that I've worked on with some of the investors, I know one bank in Arizona, they just took down a $76 million portfolio for about 36. It was about 40, I think it was about 42% or something like that of the
face value.
Principal balance, UPB. Individual properties can be 10 cents on the dollar of the unpaid balance. You know, the banks mostly haven't marked it down to that, so a lot of them, I was looking at one, they wanted 83 cents on the dollar. But somewhere between, typically around 40 to 60 cents on the dollar is what where deals are getting done today.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I mean, there are exceptions to that. You know, there are people that are buying stuff at almost par because it's a trophy kind of asset. It's the idea of, you know, we have the trophies that are almost as good as cash because there's other major hedge funds and private equity companies will buy, pay cash for it, close in 30 days, and buy it at a 5% cap rate, okay, because it's a, you know, major office building in downtown Los Angeles, and it's full,
mm-hmm.
You know. So you have those kinds of properties, and even though, and that may have a loan coming due. So those kinds of deals are probably going to get worked out. Somebody's going to bring some money into the table or whatever they have to do. That's not going to go into the, you know, onto the public sales arena. You have, you know, a lot of smaller loans that are not of interest to the national investors. So when you get under $1 million, you know, most of the private equity companies don't want to put $500,000 in, you know, Oklahoma City or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to go into that city unless they can buy, you know, a premium asset, a trophy type asset. So those markets, you know, we're seeing, you know, typically about a 40% drop in prices. And again, it varies in market to market, asset class to asset class. But I think nationally, the statistics I saw the last ones were about 42% drop from the price values of 07 and high.
How are the prices, let's say, compared to 2009 and 2011?
2009. Actually, they're actually coming back.
Okay, so there's
2009 was actually the low point of the transaction volume. It was also probably for many assets the low value the bottom of the price drop. But that's not universal. It's market by market, asset class by asset class, location by location, and you know, and it depends upon your occupancy, and you know I mean there's a lot of things out there called zombies where I know some guys. I've got some properties that I'm marketing. Can I put a little plug in for a website that I have?
Sure, go ahead.
It's called firstlookcommercial.com, and these are all distressed assets or distressed notes from some of the people that we're dealing with, some of the people that have joined some of our brokers that are members. On that website, as example, I've got, about $40, $50 million worth of real estate in anywhere from $2 million to $10 million projects. And a lot of this stuff is, you know, has high vacancy factor. Some of them, like, we have almost a 500,000 square foot, a 430,000 square foot building in St. Louis. It's on the market for, about $4 and change per square foot.
Hmm.
I mean, that's a fraction of what it would cost to build it. I don't know if you can buy land there for $4 a square foot. But it's only about 50% occupied.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know of one of people that I've dealt with before, bought a property up in Cleveland, Ohio, or Columbus, Ohio, a big industrial project. They paid $1.25 a foot for it. You know, but it's 90% vacant, and how long before, if ever, will that building ever fill back up again?
How is California?
So you have a lot of these what they call living dead. You know, they're zombies. You can buy them for nothing, but unless you know how to get them filled or they're in an area that's growing, I don't think I would want to buy a zombie
Cleveland,
in Michigan,
no.
Or Cleveland, but would you buy one in Arizona or Nevada or Florida? I mean, those markets, you know, are going to come back. They are coming back, you know. So but there are some phenomenal deals out there. It's just you have to do your homework, and a lot has to do whether on these distressed assets, you know, how long is it going to take to fill it, and, you know, can you carry it until that happens?
Yeah, do you have big enough pockets to make that be safe?
Yeah.
How is the California market as opposed to, let's say, the national picture? Maybe that's too broad of a question, but California usually leads the way in, you know, when we boom and when we go down. So have we been hit?
We've been hit. We've been hit, but maybe not as hard as Florida or Arizona and Nevada, but we've been hit bad. The difference is that the stuff has not come to market here,
as
it has in some of those other areas. You know, a lot of this stuff comes to market not because the bank brings it to market, because they're just kind of sitting like a deer in the headlights.
Mm-hmm.
They finally get shut down, then the FDIC takes, and the FDIC then sends it out to one of the loan advisors, and they sell off. You know, they sell off the loans. So it comes out to auction 6 months or a year later, and then once these things are sold, then you have new comps, and that brings down the values in the area, and it's kind of like a vicious circle like you see in the residential REO market. So if you don't ever have the REOs, you don't see a lot of that, and it doesn't drive down the comps in that. But again, it depends where you are in California. But, you know, Santa Monica doesn't have a whole lot of foreclosures, you know. You get out into Riverside County, you get up in Palmdale, and, you know, the areas where we built a lot of houses and a lot of little shopping centers and
mm-hmm.
stuff. We've got a lot of problems in those areas.
How are commercial rents compared to the peak as far as what's the discount from the peak to now?
Again, it's all over the map.
Yeah.
I've heard Orange County office market is recovering now. We had a big problem with industrial back out in trying to think of the area. It's not quite Riverside, but it's in that general area.
Mm-hmm.
Where we had a huge overbuild of industrial space, and that kind of went through a bad time. I know a lot of that, some of that's been sold, and you know, people are coming back renting industrial space. So there is recoveries going on a lot of places. I know some of the people that bought land, you know, just died in 2009, and I've heard some of the people that bought some of the land, especially in the California area, the coastal regions, that had finished lots, or at least they had some of their permits on them.
Right.
Have actually come up. Some of the people that bought some of that stuff in 2009 have already flipped it out at 100-200% profit.
So
there is recovery in different areas, but there's other areas that are still really, and most of the country, we really haven't seen, we're only just scratching the surface of the potential problems that we have here.
Is there a lot of money on the sidelines waiting for these deals?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you've got a project that's got, like a multi apartment unit, 200 or 300, 400 units, anything pretty much even over 100, you get up in a couple of $1 million range, you can almost auction them. I mean, we send out email. I sent out email, and we got hundreds of people of responses. And we had a property in Florida a while back, a 326 unit apartment in Florida, and I had two LOIs within 5 days of sending out a bulk email to our 100,000 email database.
And now the source of the money, is that REITs?
Well, certainly the REITs are sitting on a lot of money, there's also the REITs really want the trophy type assets.
Mm-hmm.
I think more, and again, I guess there's different REITs. Some of them specialize in industrial and office and whatever, but basically they want the trophies. But there's huge amounts of private equity out there, individuals, groups of people, syndicators. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of wannabes, which is kind of, it's difficult to try to sort through all those people. There's unbelievable amount of money. There's trillions of dollars out there. China wants to buy us. The Saudis want to buy us. Even some of the Europeans want to buy these distressed assets. So there's no shortage of money. It's finding the product at the right price.
What usually leads the way, residential or commercial?
I think it's got to be residential. I think that's, I track residential because, we've been in the residential REO business for years. And, there's a lot of different numbers. People are trying to put positive spins on the residential markets. But, the numbers that I look at, there's about 7 million homes out there that people aren't paying their mortgage payment. That's about more than 1 in 10. We have about 55 million homeowners in the country, and if you have 12 million or 7 million of them not making their payments, that's over 10%.
Yeah, it's a
so you know, that's not, they're not bringing it to market. They're not foreclosing. The VP REO for B of A a couple of months ago at one of the shows I was at said they admitted on a panel that 90% of the properties they foreclosed in the last 6 months have not released to the brokers. 90%.
Wow.
And if you follow like Foreclosure Radar, I don't know if you use that particular website.
Yeah, I know Sean real well, actually.
You take a look there, you'll see, you take any area and you blow it up, you see all the little dots on the screen that says, in foreclosure, trustee sale. And you go in and then you take a look at those and you start tracking them, some tracks, and you can do this pretty much anywhere. And here's, you take a quarter mile and you got 30 properties that are going to go to sale at the end of this month. Go back next month and you'll see postponed by lender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're sitting there. They got the gun loaded. They got the hammer back. They're ready to take it away from the owners. They're keeping the pressure on, but they're not. But they're not pulling the trigger. So and is it because they can't afford to take the losses? Is it because the government is putting pressure on them? Maybe they've actually gotten together and agreed, we're not going to put more on the market than we can sell. And maybe there is some, conspiracy, if you want to call it, or collective group that is sitting down and saying, okay, we're not, you get to sell one this month and I get to sell one this month, and I'm not going to. It used to be, rush for the door. The guy that got out first, lost less, And now I think there's so much there that if they all rush for the door, the prices would drop in half again. So, whatever they're doing, they are seem to be stopping the collapse of prices. Although, we've seen in just some of the properties that we've sold here recently, prices are still dropping, at least in some of the areas that we've been marketing stuff.
It seems like the pressure is on price again, even though the inventory is really still not overwhelming. It's the buyers are just either very tentative or incapable of qualifying with the new standards. That's part of
it. That's certainly. I mean, when you take all the stated income people out, and you actually make people have to show that they can afford to make their payments, and you have people buying houses because they actually want to live in them instead of thinking they're going to get rich next week by selling it. The demand isn't back up to where we were, and probably won't get back there for decades, and maybe never. Maybe they'll learn from this problem, and we won't have this huge bubble that we have, had in the real estate market, in the last, seems to be every 10 or 15 years.
The commercial usage, I'm just curious, because one of the stark examples would be an industry basically not needing commercial space like a Blockbuster, where now, you have a Netflix that's basically done the business differently.
Sure.
And you don't need that commercial space being occupied by Blockbuster. Are there a lot of those types of industries that are able to make a transition where they don't need space?
Well, I think that's generally what's going on. I mean, look what's happened with internet business, the money that's being spent to advertise, online versus your local newspaper. So certainly people are are creating more and more online businesses and less brick and mortar. You know, here and there, you hear there are people leasing up those big boxes that were dumped by some of the companies. I've actually got one on the First Look commercial website. We've got a Wix furniture store, 42,000 square foot freestanding building, sitting vacant. Okay, but it's a good location. It's across the street from a regional shopping center in Wisconsin, and it was like a $10 million deal. I think we've got it up at 2.9. But again, it's got no income. So unless you are a user, it would be a great time if you had some business model. If another Wix type furniture or somebody that came up with some kind of a brick and mortar business franchise that they could, you know, go around the country, and somebody will. They'll fill up all these big boxes. So somebody eventually is going to take it. But when you talk about does a commercial usually follow the residential? Yeah, and I don't see the residential getting solved. And until we get rid of the 7 million people not making their house payments, and another couple of million that are on the market, how are you ever going to get to full employment until we start building houses? I mean, think
yes,
about it.
Yes, absolutely.
The housing market is the biggest industry out there. So we have to clear through the residential. We have to get rid of all of this REO and do loan mods or something with these people. And once we can get rid of all that inventory, then we can start hiring people to build houses. Then we'll start getting full employment. And then the commercial market can start coming back. So I think we're in for many, many years. I've heard 5 years. I think it could be 10 years before we're gonna really be back to a full recovery in this. And add all the other problems. I mean, you can get very depressed listening to the news these days. It seems like not only the people can't pay their mortgages, the cities can't pay their bills, the counties can't pay their bills because they don't have the tax base. The states are upside down, at least California, New York, some of the big states. And now our federal government, is printing money. So the only thing I think that's saving our whole economy is that the Europe's probably in worse shape than we are. So everybody's going to print money.
Yeah, it is a mess. And I'm just curious, in the commercial world, and we're down to a little less than 2 minutes, how is California viewed as business friendly or anti-business?
I don't really have a good answer to that. I mean, people want to be in California. I know maybe the taxes are a little higher here. I mean, there are a lot of places if you have a new company that you want to start a car dealership, a car manufacturing company. People seem to want to go to the South. So you got a lot of freebies.
Mm-hmm.
California seems to be trying to tax the business more than other places, but people still want to be here, so I'm not sure if that really is a deterrent, because we've got the job base, we've got the income base, and the weather, and everybody wants to be in California.
I think you're right in the big picture. If all things are equal, if we have the employment picture picking up, we'll attract migration here, both business and individuals. People will come back to the weather, into the hustle and bustle. And what I also like about this market, it does have the cycles. I'd rather it didn't be so exaggerated, but usually when you park money at a bottom of a cycle, you're going to do very well going forward if you have patience and you have deep pockets. And we're certainly bouncing along a bottom of both residential and commercial. Ray, I want to thank you very much for joining us. This has been Ray McLean, and go ahead and give us that website, both websites, if you don't mind.
Sure. The site with some real estate on it that we send out email blasts, you can register to see that this is basically not properties that are listed. It's called firstlookcommercial.com.
Okay.
And then the association website is commercialreobrokersassociation.com, or just the initials CREOBA, CREOBA.com.
All right.
And thank you very much for having me on your show, Bruce.
Ray, I enjoyed it a lot. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.